Trial Court Trust Fund Allocation Statewide Programs. This is also an action item.
This is yet another chapter in our continuing trial court funding analysis. Same trial court budget working group created a different subcommittee. And before I turn it over to Zlatko, I want to commend again the committee members who really went about their task not with a parochial or provincial view of the job, but a real statewide view of trying to do the right thing in difficult circumstances.
Thank you, Judge Rosenberg. Yes, we embarked on have completed some portions of a line-by-line review of all of the expenditures out of the Trial Court Trust Fund and the State Trial Court Improvement and Modernization Fund. We did create an expenditure subcommittee that reviewed all of the allocations for the TCTF, and I'm calling the IMF for lack of a better term. There were 10 members, five judges, and five COs who gathered, and we provided a lot of information about what it was that these programs do, court impacts, historical expenditure levels, to really give them a sense of what it is that these dollars buy. So we had a meeting 2.5 weeks ago. We brought those recommendations then to the Trial Court Budget Working Group on the 22nd, and we did defer some issues because we felt that we didn't have the time to make all of the necessary recommendations, and in particular was the Improvement and Modernization Fund, I don't know how many individual programs are in that, funded out of that fund, but it's three pages of small font, line by line, line by line, some ranging from $4-6 million and some to, you know, $10,000-$20,000, but they're all important, but they all needed to have sort of their due discussion, and so we couldn't quite complete that when we met on the 14th, and so we're deferring that, so that's not an issue that's coming before you today for your consideration. We thought we were able to do that when we last met, but we just felt we needed to give it more time, and so we are going to be gathering data and having another meeting in September to bring that allocation to you in October. And the reason it's important is because you've heard this discussion of the $59 million, and we as a branch are continuing to see what dollars we can add to that pot, and that's what this process is. It's going line by line to seeing where there might be some savings, some creative ways to try and fund programs differently so that we can manage to offset the cuts to the greatest extent possible. And we will be working to put that inventory together and engage in this dialogue with the Department of Finance. As they say, they need to see all the data points. Well, we're working hard to give them all the data points that they need and more if it's required from our perspective. So in your package, we're basically asking you to approve allocation of $150.8 million in Trial Court Trust Fund expenditures. The attachment A in your package summarizes all of those, and I will go through them at a high level so you can see. This, again, was vetted. All of these that are recommended were reviewed and approved by the committees and the budget working group for expenditure at this time, that we felt we were in a position to make this recommendation of allocation. With respect to the Phoenix financial and HR program, we are asking approval of a $1.4 million. However, there is a large component, $6.7 million, that's related to the financial side, in which we're going to look at in the context of funding possibly out of the Improvement and Modernization Fund, which would thereby allow us to free up the dollars in the trust fund for trial court operations. So that's a matter of managing the program and seeing if there's room to spend it out of a different account. Therefore, we can save in this other account. Simply put, we're not ready to make that recommendation. We want you to know we're not taking that issue to you at this point as part of our creative thinking. And there were a lot of creative thoughts at these meetings, so I think it was a really good time. Next is an allocation of $26.8 million from the Trial Court Trust Fund for a variety of programs. The larger parts are related to the Shriver Civil Counsel program of $10 million and $11.8 million for V2 and V3 costs. Again, attachment A, page 23 in your materials gives you a listing of all the items that are included in that $26.8 million allocation. in terms of the V2, V3. In fact, they were lesser amounts than the council approved back in its March meeting. IS was looking at ways to reduce costs, and again, the commitment was that we would try to spend as little as possible, and so there are some savings here in this area that will be added to the pot as part of this overall redirection. Next is an allocation of $123.8 million for programs that fund or reimburse courts for a variety of court operations. The single largest component of this $123 million is $103.7 million for court-appointed dependency counsel. The next largest amount is $16 million for jury reimbursement. So these are, again, core court costs that we felt are appropriate at this time to move forward to allocate. Next, recommendation four is related to $7.4 million for IT costs. Historically, it's been limited to personal computers and printers, but we know that the world of IT at the courts is more expansive in need than that, and so the courts have been wanting to use those funds for servers, other IT needs. And in some cases, they haven't had a need for IT replacement in a particular year, and they've asked to redirect those funds to core court operational costs. And so what we're asking and recommending is that the council allow courts to use those funds as they see fit, as well as offering their ability to use them for core costs. Finally, is an issue related to the fund balance policy. This was brought up in the context of fund balance is being proposed to be reduced to 1%. The fact that we now have a statewide emergency fund, and the idea is that the fund balance policy manual talks about what you need to have in your fund balance for minimum operating needs. The committee discussed it, and we had varying views on this particular issue. I can't remember the vote, but I think that there were some dissenting opinions, and ultimately it was recommended that we eliminate the requirement to maintain the minimum operating emergency fund balance this year and going forward. So that's the summary of the recommendations of the working group. You have any questions?
I don't see any hands raised. David?
If I could just make a comment. I do have a comment with respect to the fifth recommendation. So if there's a motion, if we can separate the fifth one from that motion, I'd appreciate that. I certainly will speak to it when appropriate.
Okay. Thank you. Judge O'Malley?
On the court-appointed dependency council allocation, I was the chair of that committee several years ago, and our task was a request from the trial court budget working group to get this particular allocation within the budget that was allotted. And it was an allocation that was always over, and we always had to ask for funds from the trial court trust fund to be able to pay back to the courts because we'd gone over, and we worked for the last 2 years very hard with a lot of courts on looking at ways in which everybody kind of did their business differently. If there was a way that, not to tell anybody how to do their business, but if there was a way that was more efficient that other courts could learn from, and it really was a collaborative process. Everybody did agree on the end result as to how we were going to resolve this problem to get us to the base budget. That was the request of the trial court budget working group. And I just wanted to commend the courts and the committee the members that I was able to work with for their hard work in, you know, creating basically new RFPs and going out and changing the way in which they do business to get themselves within this. And so, again, as far as this allocation, people have worked very, very hard to be able to change the way that they do business, to become more efficient, to get this within this line item budget. And, again, would ask that they approve this. And it was hard work on behalf of everyone involved. Thank you, Justice Hull.
Thank you, Chief. I just wanted to note, along with Judge O'Malley's comments, and this is not, it's related to this subject, I had a call from Justice Tony Klein here in the First District, a month or so ago, where he apparently was on one of the original committees that considered the legislation relating to the appointment of counsel in dependency cases. He has long waged I won't say a battle, but taken the position that perhaps we could realize a great deal of savings in this program, recognizing perhaps that requiring the appointment of counsel for all of the children in dependency cases perhaps didn't make a great deal of sense when you were appointing counsel for a six-month-old child. He made his points. He lost. We know what the statute says. It's required. His suggestion was perhaps instead of requiring the appointment of counsel, absent a showing of good cause to the contrary, that it would be the reverse, that counsel would be appointed with a showing of good cause, the need for that. We began to discuss that in RUPRO preliminarily, but frankly, without going into the details as it percolated up some, it does not appear that it would be politically feasible to make that statutory change at this time or any time in the near future, but it was an interesting beginning and perhaps saving some money for the branch.
Mr. Spector.
I had that same issue communicated to me by an appellate justice who, I'm not at liberty to disclose his name, although frankly I doubt that he would object. When we do address the sacred cows in order to meet existing challenges, I do think that this is one that should be on the table. And I can tell you this is an appellate justice who we've held similar positions in the past, and we are philosophically divergent. And so I would suggest very strongly that this be a matter that is taken into account.
It's a policy.
So you're not alone.
You know, I would say, having been at the Conference of Chief Justices, having every Chief Justice of each state and also the territories, there's divergent practices and opinions across the board. So the National Center for State Courts is conducting the Conference of Chief Justices survey on what the practice is throughout the nation versus appointment of counsel for the child versus an appointment of a guardian ad litem versus the appointment of something else or some hybrid. And the survey came to California. I sit on that committee, and I made some changes to the survey request and also sent it to CFCC to ask them if they had some suggestions to make the survey more worthwhile and better to understand. And that's when it came to my attention that in other states there are hybrid appointments of court-appointed counsel and guardian ad litems. And this is something very interesting for us to pursue, at least a discussion, I think, when that information comes back. Judge O'Malley, Judge Kaufman.
Related to that, there's another subcommittee that was born out of this committee with regard to trying to collect funds from those who were appointed counsel if they can't afford it. And we are, I'm also on that committee, and we are working for ways to look into that. Of course, during these trying times and limited resources, that's going to be a challenge in just having a court use its resources again to collect funds, and that'll be one of the issues that we're looking at. How much do you expend to collect what little you may get? But anyway, we are looking into that, Chief, as far as seeing what monies, if any, can be redeemed from this program as well.
Thank you. Judge Kaufman.
You know, I feel for Mary and Judge O'Malley in the sense on that committee, because it's a very hard subject. How do you do that? But the issue in my mind is the legislature has told us that they want us to provide these type of services for families, and I think that's admirable. At the same time, they're cutting our budget, and I don't think they're cognizant of the fact of what that really means, is that we're obligated to provide these services yet, but we get no help in terms of those services. So somehow we have to communicate that if you want us to do these services and it's politically appropriate and it's insensitive, that you have to fund it properly.
Thank you. Alan Carlson.
Playing my usual role of coming up with something different. I want to ask LACO, so could we go back to the legislature's part of the budget change proposal or DOF and say, look, we have a separate line item for appointed counsel and appellate. Let's pull this out of the trial court thing and make a separate line item for appointed counsel for children. And then we've got a position to be able to say, you know what, you gave us $100 million last year and that's not enough. We've been operating efficiently. We're collecting money. It's still not enough. We want a BCB for 123 or get to 123.
Certainly we could. That is part of this transparency of providing more information. And so doing an individual line item for this is one way to point it out. And if it's short or over, it makes it, you know, available for discussion in that regard. So certainly, and I think that that's what they were looking for, is to provide more information. We provide these charts like this to them, and they say, oh, so these are all the different things that this money funds. They think that it's just, you know, one big pot, and we say, no, there's a process at the council that goes through, and there's, you know, rationale and justification for all of these. And so now is the time, I think, to shed more light and let people know. And as Judge Kaufman has suggested, this is a line item. If it's, you know, it is what it is, and if we want to do something about it, then we engage the administration in a conversation, however difficult it might be.
So before us, we have these five recommendations. There's been a request by David Yamasaki, but in terms of these recommendations before us, do I hear a motion?
Move approval 1-4.
Judge Bysow, Judge O'Malley seconds. Not hearing any further discussion. All in favor of items 1-4, as adopting items 1-4, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Matter carries. David, you wanted to speak to number five?
Yes, thank you very much, Chief. I have to first of all disclose that this particular item is before you, and I was one of the people who voted in favor of placing it before the council for a vote. But I've had an opportunity to reflect on what this actually is going to mean for us. And clearly the fiscal crisis that we have has prompted many of us, many courts, to draw on the reserve, this particular reserve, which is an emergency reserve to help us in times of trouble. And clearly this is a time of trouble. But the fact is the rule itself allows us to draw on this money when we need to. And by rescinding this policy, I think we kind of shoot ourselves in the foot by making the argument that it's very important for us to maintain reserves. So I believe that it would be prudent for us to not act on rescinding this particular policy and just preserving it and using it as yet one of those critical arguments that we have to make to the Department of Finance and whomever, to suggest that we need to carry reserves for these emergency purposes.
Kurt Soderlund, and then Judge Earl.
The rationale for putting that on for the budget working group was with the best of intentions, if you will, at the time, because with the policy currently in place, the concern is that if IAS, the audit group, does an audit of a particular court, and with that policy still in effect, it lays the foundation for a finding, if you will, since the requirement is still there. But understanding the optics that David is trying to characterize appropriately, I believe, that at least my personal opinion, that's probably the best approach in terms of dealing with finance on it. Otherwise, what we're saying is those fund balances and those reserves for operating emergencies and contingencies does not matter.
Judge Earl?
I also was on the subcommittee working group and was someone that supported the recommendation that the policy be rescinded. And those of you who are also on it can correct me if I'm wrong, but the position of those of us who supported it was that courts are in a position that they cannot afford to set aside money to comply with this policy, and that why would we, at a time when we have significantly reduced resources, put ourselves in a position to say, but we're still going to comply by saving certain amount of money that we need for other expenses that we have. And we were also mindful of the complementary government code section that allows for courts to be placed in receivership, I think it is, if they do not comply with this policy, and did not wish to put ourselves in this position. So I think ultimately, the bottom line of those that supported it was that why would we do this to ourselves? We cannot afford to do it at this time. And that may be different than what David is talking about.
I move we approve recommendation 5.
Judge Lyons' motion. We'll hear a second.
Second
by Alan Carlson. Any further discussion on 5?
I'm sorry, so the motion is to approve the rescinding
yes.
of it?
Yes, as worded. Eliminate the requirement.
Chief, let me just say that this particular item engendered a lot of discussion at the trial court budget working group, and it's kind of a Hobson's choice, and no good choice here.
Mm-hmm.
There are problems either way. A substantial majority of the working group favored this proposal, but there were a number of the working group members who would have gone the other way.
Can I ask a question? Was there no middle ground, no modification, no aspirational, no factors? I mean, I know this rule, and I can say without attributing this to any particular court that it's been honored in the breach. So I saw it here and wondered
it's true.
I can tell you we did not identify middle ground during our discussion. It was one way or the other.
Okay. Mary Todd, Beth Todd.
Just to follow up on maybe a middle ground is, would it be possible that the policy stands but it's modified to require that at such time that you have to dip below that emergency you provide notice? Seems to me that would be very valuable information to have.
And it currently does provide that if you cannot meet that minimum, you
and
do
we rescind
inform
the part
this.
That you go into receivership.
But the second part was then you had to offer a plan on how to get back to a level where you maintained that minimum.
And
so
that's the portion that
right.
would be rescinded.
That might be where it still maintains the fact that as a branch we should have trial courts have reserves that have a minimum operating level, but the onus and the sort of negative implications of not meeting it should be softened within the branch.
The argument that the proponents made, and I abstained on this one because I could really see both sides, is that with this requirement in place, courts are placed in an impossible position if they really needed to spend the money, for example, to save some employees. But as Lotko says, you can breach it. Okay, it's not a complete hard and fast requirement. It is possible to breach this minimum. Isn't that correct?
Mm-hmm. But I think the implications, as Judge Earle has suggested, should be revised so that maybe it's a matter of it is the policy, but if you cannot maintain it, you merely notify us as to that condition without any negative consequence given the circumstances.
Judge Stowe and then Judge O'Malley.
Is there any problem with just suspending the policy during this time of fiscal crisis?
Well, we just discussed, I think, having it for the interim period. I'm trying to remember, do we have that as one of the options, Stephen? I think it was hold it until the fund balances are gone, do it now, or wait until...
Well, I think what Judge So is suggesting may be, in fact, a middle ground. Instead of rescinding it, maybe it's semantics, suspend it for 1 year.
Yeah.
Judge O'Malley?
So just a point of clarification, this is a council policy.
Right.
It's something we've imposed
mm-hmm.
on ourselves.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And as far as a disciplinary matter, if a court were to violate the council policy, then who would decide whether or not that court would go into receivership? The council?
I believe so.
Yes, there's a government code section that allows the council to do that.
And or what else?
You can give them some direction and not put them under
aid them, assist them, monitor them, look
you
to see,
them funding,
ask for a plan to see if they could get around it. So it seems to me that we have all sorts of options short of receivership if we vote yes on number 5, correct?
Right. But just to put it in perspective,
No.
You're voting no.
We maintain the policy.
No, we're going to rescind it.
No, not here.
My motion
those options are only if you don't rescind.
Judge Elias.
My motion was to accept the recommendation and to rescind it
because the courts are going to have so little money now. There's a 2% statewide. There's more reserve, and that we are just, if we make them justify everything, we're just adding more burden, and money might be needed by people at this point.
Let me clarify. So if we vote to rescind, we're saying we're not going to follow this policy.
Correct.
Yeah. Right. And the worry is that if we violate our own policy, then a court might inevitably have to go into receivership. But honestly, there's a lot of other steps short of having any court go into receivership if you're in violation of this policy. But if we rescind it, it wouldn't even be an option.
Submit a request for emergency.
Judge Kaufman, did you have your hand up?
Yeah. I think there's got to be a middle ground. And the other thing that I'm concerned about is we still don't know where we really are. In other words, we're going to form a committee. We're going to meet with Adam at the Department of Finance. I don't think we've really finalized where we are. If we were either suspend it for 6 months or a period of time until we can get a better idea, all the courts are going to have money for another few months, you know, before we start running. Most of us have reserves. And then we can readjust. I just don't want to make a draconian rule that causes a problem down the line. Also, if we do rescind it, or whatever we do, when the BSA comes and does an audit, what does that do if we're violating our own policy? I mean, I don't think we want to set ourselves for failure. I think we've got to be very careful. And I'm not sure who's right or wrong. I really have mixed feelings on this one, and I think
I'd like
a little more information before we really – maybe there is a middle ground, as the Chief has indicated.
I don't know. Justice Hall.
Thank you, Chief. I hadn't thought of Judge Kaufman's concern about audits. I don't know how that fits into this, but it does seem to me that what Judge Rosenberg mentioned a few minutes ago, I mean, aren't we talking a matter of semantics here? It's our policy. We can rescind it and reimpose it. We can suspend it and unsuspend it. We can maintain it and rescind it later.
We can waive it.
We can waive it. Who cares at this point?
You can boil it. You can bake it. You can
right. And so I'm in favor of the motion with the understanding that if we rescind it now, when circumstances are different in the future, we can reimpose it.
One more element that everyone should be aware of: the people who are opposed to changing this thought it. By changing it, we would undercut our own position that we do need to maintain a minimum funding level, minimum reserves, if you will. So I guess I'm starting to turn to the position of the semantics perhaps are important, and maybe voting to suspend is perhaps a better approach.
Judge Herman.
Yeah, I just think also we've been, instead of the original one-year burn-off period that the legislature was looking at and finance was looking at, we're now down to this kind of like two-year down ramp. So, you know, in that context, suspension that makes sense because we can always go back the other way, number one, and argue the policy and reimpose it for the final year.
Justice Hull.
Thank you, Chief. I don't oppose suspending it, rescinding it, whatever we do, but if we rescind it, while it may take away some arguments, does it not add the other argument that we've been put in such a difficult position that the trial courts cannot possibly maintain any, what's the phrase, life net support or whatever it might be, because we don't have the money to do even that anymore?
I mean, there are some courts out there where the legislative restrictions, children's waiting room is one example, are so onerous that those reserves that cannot spend exceed the 1%. And so so there will be some courts that will be theoretically in default of this policy as soon as they get to 1%.
So the motion on the floor is to rescind, is to accept the recommendation as stated in page 2 of this item.
Unless there's a friendly amendment to suspend it for 2 years.
Well, so I'd like a vote on mine, and then I'll listen to his substitute.
So I'm going to do the point of order that I've learned here. Judge, so let me clarify. Are you making a substitute motion?
I think Judge Yu.
Yes,
a substitute motion.
I was going to, Chief. My substitute motion would be that the council suspend the rule for 2 years.
And who's? And the second is Judge O'Malley, and so that gets voted on first. And so all in favor, and Jody's ready with the roll call, all in favor of the suspend the requirement, say, as you say aye, please raise your hand. Aye.
Aye.
So, I get this. Okay, it has the
13.
I get 13.
Okay.
And the vote on the phone.
So that passes.
Well, get, you need to get the no votes.
Yes, 14. And how many no's?
And on the phone.
Actually, Chief, you also have another vote on the phone, so.
Yes. So now.
It's an aye.
Oh, are you in favor of the suspension, Mark?
Yes.
Okay, so that's 15. Any opposition to the suspension? No no's.
Emily, did you vote?
Oh, I didn't know. I'm not raising my hand.
Okay, so we don't record any no's on the substitute motion, and that moots the original motion, I believe.
Correct.
So that's for 2 years from today. Is that correct?
It's
yes.
Two fiscal years, isn't it? Or is it two fiscal years? It would be two fiscal years. Realistically, it would be just two fiscal years.
Two fiscal years. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So that can
yes.
Take it up again.
Thank you. You know, that we had a very interesting discussion on item five as well, so it was nice to see this good discussion here at the council.
And I would appreciate everybody's interest and involvement. And I would offer that if you ever have any questions, I know budget can be, and I'm trying to make it manageable, understandable, but I would offer if anybody needs to ask me a question that they may not feel comfortable asking, please pick up the phone, email me. We'll do it in confidence so no one knows. But I really want you to feel like this isn't just something that I talk and you're okay. I want you to really engage me. I want to hear from you and make it.
When you said, which means you take it from another account, I understood that.
So Judge Rosenberg and Zlotko and Stephen and all members of the Trial Court Budget Working Group, you've had a novel experience this last, and you all rose to the occasion and were able to give the Judicial Council guidance and your expertise, and all of us are grateful for your ability to bring this to us in this forum. Thank you.
Thank you.
Judge Hardcastle.
Chief, I promised a news update, and AB 340 passed the Assembly 48-8, and it's on its way to the Senate.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
Well, last day.
What does it say?
Appreciate it.
We don't know the terms of it.
So that concludes our agenda, but I do want to conclude by saying we unfortunately take this time in our meetings to remember our judicial colleagues recently deceased, and they are Honorable Edwin Beach, Court of Appeals, Second Appellate District, the Honorable William Biddick, Superior Court of San Joaquin County, the Honorable William Jensen, Superior Court of Solano County, the Honorable William Lee, Superior Court of Orange County, the Honorable Alfred Lord, Superior Court of San Diego County, and the Honorable Keith G. Wissott, Superior Court of Los Angeles County. All were retired from the bench, and we honor them for their service to the courts and to the public and the cause of justice. Thank you. This concludes our meeting. Our next scheduled business meeting is October 25th, and we bid our departing members of Judicial Council fond farewells.
Do we need a closed session?